Okay, it is my honor to be here. I would like to thank the organizers for inviting me. It's been a very enjoyable stay here, and with all these interesting discussions and also formal social times too, they are very, very nice. So last week, if you you probably remember. For those of you who were here last week, my colleague Randall Grover has talked about conceptual challenges of QED. This week, I plan to talk about something much simpler, numerical studies of peer creation. And in fact, my intention over here will be through these numerical examples to try to make some connections with AMO ionization physics. And that's where I came from, and hopefully can get more people interested in this new field, I will say, about quantum field. So computational quantum field theory. Yeah, let me begin by acknowledging my teams. So my longtime collaborator, Randall Grover, sitting here. Over the years, we have luckily supported by the National Science Foundation, several postdoctoral fellows, as well as a large number of undergraduate research assistants. So most recently, we started some fairly successful collaboration, actually, also with colleagues in China, including scientists from Beijing, as well as the very new collaborators in Shanghai. So here are several graduate students. She has already obtained her PhD and right now is a faculty in one of the universities in Beijing. I have a master's, and Liu is expecting his PhD next year. And these are two new PhD students. I think you have seen this diagram a lot in the last 2 weeks, so I do not plan to explain too much. I just want to reiterate and say that the ultra intense laser development very recently, and Tony also pointed out earlier, made us all very, very excited about the perspective of studying the so-called vacuum physics to understand more details about vacuum breakdown as well as peer creation. This is so exciting from these lasers pointing towards Schrödinger limit or with some tricks, one can effectively probably lower this limit so that they will meet somewhere. In fact, even economists wrote an article with this very humorous title of Zepto technology is just around the corner. That was like 10 years ago. So we hope
I can't refrain myself.
Yeah.
I really object that we put newspapers to validate our research.
It's a joke.
But I find it more and more with younger people that it appears in their talks as if what validates us is the story we tell the newspaper people to publish, and they accept sometimes to publish. That means we are okay. I would not encourage this trend. I hope we.
But if nobody speaks, the public will not know either, right? It will have to go through.
I don't think that it shouldn't appear in The Economist. It shouldn't appear in scientific seminars.
Yeah, I have another transparency with more than a dozen of them.
This is my pitch.
Okay. Yeah, okay, thank you for that comment. Okay, and you have heard about there are three kinds of experiments, initially due to heavy ion collision, and then later on laser electron collision, the famous Stanford experiment. And most recently, efforts were they're trying to convert directly the energy from lasers into matter. So experiments were planned or are being developed at ELI and IZEST and such. But so far, most of the work were done theoretically with either to explore the new concepts, try to see what is the accurate value for the threshold, or even be able to discuss some experimental situations. So I just have, you know, included a few. I'm sure I have left some other groups out. But I think theoretical studies were roughly divided into the more traditional S-matrix type of investigations, as well as more like ab initio numerical investigations. And we certainly fall into under this category. So yeah, you don't have to read all these lines, but I just want to say that I came from the ionization community, and you know, it was like about 20 years ago when we were interested in investigating the relativistic quantum mechanics, and you can even see things like harmonic generation over here. But about a little bit more than 10 years ago, we started interested in also quantum field theory, because it realized at very high intensity there will be pair creation, and in order to describe this kind of a process, we will need something beyond quantum mechanics. And Reiner has discussed also some efforts of the numerical QED, so which actually I will not be talking about today, but mostly focusing on some of the applications, old and new, but in this area. Yeah, so before I start, I would actually like to try to make some connection between ionization physics. As we all know, usually you start with some usually bound state, and then you will like to excite the population into some continuum state over there. So over here, pair creation is actually not very different in terms of diagram, except that that bound state probably has been expanded into negative continuum over here. And so the goal over here to create pairs eventually translates into transferring population from negative energy manifold into the positive energy manifold. And there can be pictorially illustrated in several different ways. For example, if you were to apply a strong electric field, you can bend these energy gaps one way. When there's overlap, then you can have something like this, a quantum tunneling called a Schrödinger tunneling. Or you can apply alternating field, and in that case, it will induce some kind of a multi-photon type of transition. You can even talk about producing some kind of a bound state from the positive energy state, and then the transition can be enhanced by passing through these bound states. These are real states. Or these states can even, under some conditions, kind of be embedded in the negative continuum, that is, the diving of some bound states into the negative continuum. And I think last week, Feng Shui talked about you know, the mixing of bound and bound states as well. But anyway, if time permits, I will like to, you know, find some examples from several of these diagrams. So with that little introduction, I would like to spend the next few minutes talking a little bit about how we go about approaching this numerically, this problem. And then I would like to give a older application of this method in the so-called Klein paradox. Then after that, depending on time, I think I have a number of applications that are more recent. However, they're kind of all parallel to each other. I do not have an agenda. It's a matter of time, and I'll pick some examples from this list. So let me start from the quantum mechanical Dirac equation. This is the single particle Dirac equation, which describes you know, relativistic quantum mechanics. In this Hamiltonian, you can see alpha and beta are the Dirac spinners. The external field, so the field is not quantized, but actually comes in through these functions, the A function and V function. This is the vector potential, this is scalar potential. That describes the energy transfer from the outside. So in the absence of the external field, The energy actually follows this familiar formula. So when you draw this out, you know, you get a positive energy manifold as well as negative energy manifold, and they're separated by this famous 2mc squared gap, mass gap, in atomic unit, because we came from atomic community. Usually mass is supposed, assumed to be one, so it's a c squared over here minus a c squared. So with this kind of a description, any kind of starting from any initial wave function, because this Hamiltonian is Hermitian, you can show that the norm at any later time is going to be preserved. So then the question is, how do you describe pure creation? Because pure creation physically is supposed to represent something with wave function, probably started out with zero and gradually grows, and this thing can go to infinity. How do you do this? It turns out we have to go beyond quantum mechanics and have to use some concepts from quantum field theory. So in this case, we have basically two things. One is called quantum field operator, which tells you when this particle is being created or when it is being killed, destroyed. And then the other part over here is your regular quantum mechanical wave function that tells you when it is created, it has the shape. So usually it is not a point particle, but rather has a spatial extent. That information is written in this wave function. So in some sense, if I call this the cat over here, this is sort of the hat, the operator, then this quantum field operator in some sense is a hybrid, right? It's the product of the two. So if I were to draw a diagram, it will look probably like this guy, cat in a hat. So the cat itself is this part, and the hat is the operator, okay? Next, it turns out that this quantum field operator actually satisfies both the Heisenberg equation as well as Schrodinger equation. So the time evolution of the quantum field operator over here can be advanced either through the advancement of the field operator, which means that you change the hat over there, or it can come in through the evolution of the wave function, which is like changing the cat. So from this guy to this tiger, also a cat. But anyway, in practice, it is of course much easier to solve the time-dependent Schrodinger equation. So that is usually what the approach that we take by using these wave functions. Usually we have to solve the time-dependent Dirac equation large number of times because there is a summation in this expression, and use all these summations to form this time-dependent operator. And then when that is inserted over here, this is the electronic part of the field operator. So with this operator, which is part of the whole field operator, there is also another part which represents positron action. But if we were to use the electronic part of the field operator, we can calculate the total number of created electrons. And that is accomplished by doing this expectation value, for example, starting from the vacuum state. After we have removed all these operators, it turns out the final expression can be expressed in this very simple form as this double sum, and it has a very nice little interpretation, and that goes like this. If we were to start from this position, you know, that means we can practically start from one of the negative energy states, and then we would like to evolve this under the full Hamiltonian, the Hamiltonian with the external field included in there, so that we get, you know, this n of t. So that's like ut times n is the time evolution starting from the field-free negative energy state. But because of this external field, there will be a certain overlap with later on with the positive energy state. And then over here, this says that we have to project this evolved state with a positive energy state and add up all the contributions. That is the first summation. So in order to also get the final result, we need to repeat this process for all the other initial n states. So finally, that number represents the created electrons. So you don't have to read this. This is just what I explained about the procedure. But I just want to summarize and say that numerically, we need to start our simulation with one of the negative energy states and to get this projection with a positive energy state. And then we need to move on to the next energy state and then the next energy state. But after you have added the contribution of all this initial negative energy states, it looks from the side as if you have started the transition from a completely filled negative energy manifold, which is like the Dirac-C idea, right? So however, all these results were, of course, from the quantum field theory. Initially, I believe Dirac-C probably was, I might be incorrect, proposed just without the quantum field consideration. But here is a little sort of a backup of that. Yeah, so with this technique, we have, 10 years ago started looking into some of the space-time resolved pure creation processes. And this is 10 years later, Renner and I are still feeling very emotional about this, you know, because it's been always our dream to, you know, be able to see the D in QED, you know. So there's a dynamics in there, and this kind of movie certainly gives us space-time resolved dynamics. This kind of techniques, of course, nowadays are successfully implemented by many other groups like Florian and Francois, you have heard in the last weeks. So here is the computer simulation at time equals to zero. We turn on a supercritical force field, which is about this wide. And then you can see the peers are being created. Because there's a force field still present over there, so these charges are being dragged out of the interaction region, flying out in the opposite directions. With the exception of the turn-on effect, which is like this little spike at the beginning, this whole thing is developing into a very smooth profile. This is the spatial distribution of the created electron-positron pair during this. So this is,
So here you assume that the field is always present?
Yes, yes, the field is always present. It was supercritical, so we have to define this potential to be more than 2 mc squared. And then the width of it is about on the order of Compton wavelength. So that is the situation.
What exactly is the quantity that we're plotting?
We're plotting the spatial density, of, this is like the wave function squared, sort of. So you can see that the wave function, the norm does start from zero and started to develop and get more and more. Okay, so I would like to talk about another application using this computational QFT technique, and that is the famous Klein paradox proposed by Oscar Klein in 1929. Imagine the scattering of an electron with a infinitely wide potential barrier like this. When the barrier is, the height of the barrier is much less than 2 mc squared. And however, this incoming electron energy is less than this the barrier height, then according to classical mechanics, this ball can never roll over roll up this potential. So it will go up and then come back down and get reflected 100% because this potential is just infinitely wide. So there will be probably some temporary quantum mechanical tunneling, but then it will come back. And that is summarized in this particular numerical illustration, courtesy of Bernard Thaler. So as you can see, this is 100% reflection. However, when the potential barrier exceeds the value of 2mc squared, according to Klein, he found that for the single particle quantum mechanics, there is a finite probability for this incoming electron to kind of tunnel through, to get transmitted to positive infinity. And so in some sense, there'll be some part of a particle that will roll either up or roll under this potential. Yeah? And this mysterious portion of that transmission has been referred to as Klein tunneling. So here is a computer simulation of a single particle Dirac equation solution. The height of the potential barrier is more than 2mc squared on this side. And here is where it begins. And you can see this wave packet comes in, gets scattered with the potential, and then there's a certain amount gets reflected. However, there's this Klein tunneling going to the right. If we were to extend the simulation even longer, this will go to positive infinity. So how do you understand this transmitted portion? Well, it turns out the Klein paradox involves three particles. In the process, the incoming electron and the pair creation due to this already supercritical potential barrier. However, in the literature, we believe that most of this, interpretations of the Klein paradox were either not including the pair creation correctly or the incoming particle. And our computational quantum field theory movies has for the first time reviewed what is going on during such a scattering. So you see, I have actually, in this particular movie, removed the created electron, which will fly to the left, because it is going to be symmetric with the created positron, which is in red. If you remember, without the incoming electron, this created positron is supposed to produce a very smooth profile. But right now, when the incoming electron has come to this potential region, it will produce a hole in the created positron profile. So if you were to analyze actually the shape of this hole very carefully, you'll realize it corresponds precisely the amount of Klein tunneling. So therefore, the meaning of the Klein tunneling is nothing but the amount of suppressed positron created during this process. So as you can see, this kind of a space-time analysis allows us to see what is going on during this kind of scattering process with the full space-time resolution. The reason that we mentioned about this is a textbook that has been extremely helpful in our investigations over the years. But there were statements like this: electron, after the scattering will knock out some more electrons, which I think is not very accurate. The truth is, the incoming electron over here is actually suppressing the amount of pure creation when it comes to the potential barrier, and therefore it will reduce the amount of electron production. Okay, so this is sort of one of the examples, early applications of this. So I think Florian has discussed about something very similar to this graph before, but it, there are several ways actually to create peers. One is by having a very strong force that will give you, you know, in the long time limit, this kind of a steady peer creation rate, which can be matched with the Schringer formula. Or we can play with the time dependence. The time dependent force field can give us peer creation also for even under critical condition. And then more than one field, if we were to have multiple field combination, it can also help to create peers. Yeah, so here is one of the work that we did to illustrate how two subcritical force fields, when placed you know, at a distance with each other, can overall actually also produce produce peers. In fact, here, well, here's a plot of the number of creation as a function of time. So you see this rising curve. And in fact, the amount of peer creation gets more and more when you reduce this the spacing between those two subcritical force fields. Next, we asked ourselves, what about also including in the effect due to alternating field? So this is a work with two fields, one constant field and another one being the alternating field. So in this particular case, there are two different limits. Limit number one is when the constant field is very weak. So in this case, I call this a multi-photon transition regime. And in fact, in this case, it's mostly single photon transition. And there you have effectively a almost like a Einstein's photoelectric effect. In this case, the frequency has to be larger than this 2mc squared energy gap to have a peer creation effectively. And then the second limit is the strong constant field regime. In this case, you will bend these edges, continuum energy edges, just like you know, barrier suppression ionization, kind of, tunneling ionization kind of stuff. However, for this positive energy and negative energy manifolds to have a certain overlap, we need this amount of bending to be more than 2mc squared. And when that condition is fulfilled, there will be a probability of this kind of a tunneling, Schringer tunneling. So the motivation for including both of the fields is if we only have the alternating field in there, then these particles will be created due to time dependence. However, if they were not able to move out fast enough, then the existing electrons will suppress the further creation. So in order to enhance the peer creation, we would add the second field, which is constant, which is sort of dragging these already produced electrons out of the interaction region to leave some room for further peer creation. So we will expect the combination of these two fields will enhance the peer creation comparing to just a single field situation. So here I have included the peer creation signal as a function of time for a few different cases. First of all, the constant field is supercritical in strength. However, on this time scale, the rate of creation is very, very low. So this is the black line down here, nearly zero peer creation. On the other hand, if we were to switch on the alternating field alone, we have these two red curves. So you see, the if the frequency is under that critical value of 2c squared, just 1.5c squared, the creation in such an alternating field is not very efficient either. So you have to be over that 2c squared, and then the pure creation gets dramatically enhanced. So it jumps up to this level. And finally, you can see also, if we were to include also the static field together with alternating field, then the signal gets further enhanced. So that's the blue curve for this frequency has been jumped up from here to here. And then for the other frequency also has enhancement of the pure creation.
But this probably happens because you're pumping more energy into the system.
Yes.
And the energy is additive.
Yes, also true, yeah. Yeah, but it's not always the case. There is a sometimes more, sometimes less. I'm just giving you a case when, in principle, it gets enhanced. And here is a movie about the spatial density, those created electrons, how they're moving out in space and time. So the alternating field is there to produce these particles, and then the constant field drags it out. There are apparently two kinds of trajectories. One of them has initially the velocity pointing to the right, then they will be rolling down this potential curve. And then the second kind of trajectories initially were going in the wrong direction, but then they will soon be decelerated in the opposite field direction and turns around and roll down this potential hill. So as a result, you have this overall spatial density. So here is another look at the same computer simulation, but with a created number of pairs as a function of frequency. And we have looked at two different limits. One of them is when the constant field is very weak. In that case, you get these dark black curves. So, and it corresponds to this kind of a diagram. In that case, these are essentially constant, and single photon transition occurs. Therefore, the frequency before when it is less than 2 mc squared, no pairs will be created. But then when it's over that limit, the creation has a jump. That's why you have the single peak jump. And this whole thing can be more or less reproduced by perturbation theory. This dashed line is a perturbation theory. On the other hand, the most interesting case will be when the constant field is much stronger. In that case, we actually see pair creation in the region when, you know, beforehand there was zero pair creation, you know. And that corresponds to this particular drawing. You have a combination. You have a combination between photon transition to the middle of the gap, then that is followed by this Schwinger tunneling. Yeah? So this process is responsible for this jump from this zero level up. On the other side, we can see a competition actually between the straight multi-photon transition as well as this two-step transition that I was just talking about. In fact, there could be an interference between them, which is the result of this up and down oscillation of this curve on the other side. Of course, there are still a lot to be learned from detail mechanism to be learned about this curve, but we have come up with a two-level model. The results of the two-level model are these blue square dots. As you can see, this model, very primitive model, has captured most of these features, both in the region when they're supposed to be tunneling, and on the other side, there was a competition between those two pathways. Both of them are being captured in that model. So,
Sorry, I'm wondering, you have the two effects, the constant field and the alternating.
Yes.
If you would write a potential which is alpha times one plus beta times the other within some appropriate normalization, alpha plus beta equals one. That means that you have a constant amount of energy you're putting in the system. How would the structure look in this alpha beta plane? Would there be lines of constant NT, or would there be some structure in this plane?
First of all, there is no feedback to the field, right? The external field is always there.
No, keep two components, as you said. Keep a constant part.
Yeah.
And also allow an alternating.
Yeah, this is the case. This is the case.
Allow with the general coefficients, alpha plus beta, mm-hmm. but with the total energy pumped into the system constant. And how does this plane look like? Would there be lines of constant production? Would there be some preferred point in this plane?
I think it will be similar to this. Because that's precisely what we did. We have, you know,
You gave extreme cases.
No, we have the combination of two. The red one is when both of them are on.
Yeah, but that's external extreme. So it's F1, F2, or F1 plus F2?
F1 plus F2.
But how about alpha F1 plus beta F2?
Then I think the shape will be similar, but probably the height will change, and all these amplitudes will be different. Yeah. Okay, so finally, we have analyzed the amount of production as a function of outgoing energy for these particles, right? And we found these peaks, like ABC over here, they kind of reminded us of the above threshold ionization peaks. Yeah, so I call this, because these are pair creations, I call them above threshold pair creation peaks. They are not exactly actually one photon energy apart from each other, because these transitions are effectively one photon transition, but it's symmetric about this energy gap, or two photon transition around the same energy gap, three photon transition. These are the strongest transitions. And they are responsible, the tip of these errors are responsible for these three peaks. Yeah. So this is another example. This kind of a pair creation process, you know, can learn a lot from our knowledge about AMO, ATI physics.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
So are you saying that the spacing is half the photon energy? Mm-hmm. Is that what you're
Yes, saying? In this case, yeah. It, because the particular frequency that which we picked it is half. Yeah. Okay, so, yeah, go ahead.
And the reason is basically momentum conservation is behind. So that's why these initial state and the final state like to have the same momentum. That's if you go on back.
Yeah.
That's some of the reason why some of the most important initial state is also then shifting depending on the photon energy.
So in the calculation you have all the negative energy states included, but you find that these arrows are the most likely ones.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's different than in ionization, we always start the same.
Yeah, this momentum conservation is better when, it is a wider field distribution. Okay, so that was the investigation about this combination of a constant field with an alternating field. Well, in the next example, we have looked into a time-dependent also potential, but in this case, this is a potential well. Now, the reason that we introduced this potential well is that we would like to see possibly some kind of a quantum coherence due to the creation from this side of the potential well and this side of the potential well. Because of this introduction of this new length scale, there will be some kind of a quantum coherence. Also, because this potential well eventually will form possibly a bound state, and then there will be some kind of a transition, and how, maybe there will be some kind of a transient bound state being formed in this kind of a alternating potential well system. So this is our next example. So here's a plot of the number of pairs created as a function of time. It shows this oscillation as a function of this separation between those two edges of the potential well. So initially at the smallest value of the potential well, you see this is the amount of production. And then you go to the next highest value of D, it has dropped all this way and then comes back up and so on. So there is an oscillatory non-monotonic behavior due to the change of this potential well width. And it turns out all these oscillations and some other oscillations in momentum can be nicely described, very well described by perturbation theory again. What is very interesting is in the electron outgoing energy spectrum again. So if we were to compare the potential well at the finite width versus the potential well at infinite width, we realize there will be some new peaks produced, and these peaks are mostly enhanced when this condition is true. This D over C is the characteristic time for an electron to travel from one edge of the potential well to the other edge of the potential well. So that is the characteristic time. And when that is comparable to the period of this oscillation, then these peaks are mostly enhanced. They should probably remind you of, in ATI physics, there's something called Freeman resonant peaks sometimes. And it turns out these peaks are really related to the some kind of a field-induced bound states. Yeah? So it turns out in one oscillating cycle, half of the cycle, you have field-induced bound states coming from the negative energy manifold, and the other half of the oscillating cycle, some bound states coming out of the other side. And these induced bound states actually get populated, as you can see in these population plots. And then the transition through these populated states actually will give you the enhancement of those peaks that you saw earlier, like this A, this B, and then between those two, there is one photon transition.
So D is the width of
D is the width of the well. That there is V. In this case is like this. It's actually technically under critical. But because of this time dependence, it can produce these pairs and such. Okay, so I think I still have time. So let me give you another example over here. In this case, we look at a little bit of the influence due to a magnetic field. So far, most of the discussions were due to just the presence of electric field, but in order to eventually understand the action due to lasers, of course, laser has magnetic field components, so the action cannot be neglected. And this is only a very special case. Florian has mentioned this creation signal is very sensitive to the relative orientation between the electric field and the magnetic field when it's parallel to each other. I think it's an enhancement, and when it's perpendicular, it is a suppression. This is actually something you're about to see. But this model that we have chosen actually was inspired by my colleagues in China. They were laser plasma experimental physicists, actually. So they told me that there is this model in which the magnetic field and electric field are perpendicular to each other. Each of these fields are localized, and they are allowed to change in the direction of the electric field. In the third direction, both of these fields are constant. So in that particular situation, it turns out the momentum in that direction is conserved. So this whole problem can be broken down into a number of quasi one-dimensional cases. So that makes this numerical simulation very easy to perform. So which is the first example that we did with a magnetic field influence. So first of all, we have studied the case when the electric field width and the magnetic field are the same. So in that case, we did find a suppression when the magnetic field is present, comparing to the case when the magnetic field is not present. That's the yellow one. So you see the black line is lower than the yellow line. And this can be understood in this case because these two widths are identical. In terms of Lorentz transformation, you can Lorentz transform into a coordinate frame in which magnetic field is not present. So in that case, the effective electric field is less. Therefore, as a result, it produces less amount of pair creation. So in fact, we have done another computer simulation with just the electric field, but with the effective electric field and no magnetic field. So you see the amount of creation rate over here of the dashed line is the same as the slope of this solid black line. Okay, so what is also very, very interesting is when the magnetic field width is different from the electric field width. So in this case, the magnetic field width is larger than that of the electric field width. And in that case, we see with increasing width of the magnetic field by fixing the other width, you see there's the amount of suppression in the pair creation. So this is the width of 0.5 divided by C in this atomic unit, and that was 0.1 divided by C. So there is a certain amount of creation for wider magnetic field extension. And this is related to the fact that in this kind of configuration, there's a cyclotron orbits can be formed, and they can bring these electrons back to the interaction zone. And at that place, it will, you know, Pauli block the further pair creation. So that sort of is the origin of the suppression. And eventually, it can actually completely shut off the pair creation, as you can see for this particular value of the magnetic field width. And beyond that, we can even find, you know, essentially also no more creation, but oscillation around some values. So that was very surprising result. So both this complete shut off as well as these oscillation can be analyzed through this kind of instantaneous energy eigenvalues as a function of various width of the magnetic field. So in this case, you see when the positive and negative continuum states are overlapped, this is the region in which we have a steady amount of pure creation. And when these two are separated from each other, this whole system has turned itself into subcritical. Therefore, it shuts off all pure creation at this point. And this value corresponds very well with the value we found numerically in the previous computer simulation. And after that, there are even bound states formed. These are the field-induced Landau levels, actually, in there. And you can show that the oscillation that we observed in the previous slide, these guys, they correspond to the transition between these field breast Landau levels. So there is a lot of rich new physics in here, and I don't believe they have been understood very well beyond these threshold values and oscillation frequencies and such. Well, the next question is, what happens when we produce bosons
Because so far we were talking about pair creation, electron positron pair creation, even though the it takes much more effort to create you know, the lightest boson, probably pi ions, but still what would happen if we were forced to force these created pi ions to come back using these magnetic bending technique? What will happen in that? We would, from our experience, we should predict something that is very, very different from the pure creation of fermions. So here is a computer simulation of a supercritical potential barrier. And so you see this pure creation initially, and then followed by the suppression. And this level over here around 2 is because of poly blocking, there are only 2 electrons allowed in that particular bound state. And then there, the next level is 4 of them. So, and this is due to the Pauli exclusion principle on the fermions. However, exactly the same potential, if we were to discuss the pair creation, but for bosons, we find something just completely the opposite of it. So here the vertical axis is on the log scale. So we see then the pair creation gets exponentially enhanced, actually. So we have the experience that the bosons will like to be in the presence of bosons. And then we get some kind of a stimulated emission of boson pair creation. For exactly the same setup. So because of that, we also anticipate probably that the behavior of pure creation inside of the magnetic field will behave completely opposite of each other when we switch this from the fermion pure creation to boson pure creation, which has been confirmed. So this is the number of bosons being created as a function of time for certain wide magnetic field width. You see this exponential growing curve, which again is following the so-called, I suppose you can call this anti-Fermi Pauli exclusion principle. And again, we were able to actually get some estimation on the pair creation rate and that, but I think the detail mechanism of such stimulated enhancement in boson pair creation is far from you know, well understood. So that's another open question. And eventually, if we were to keep increasing the width of the magnetic field, similar kind of a suppression will set in, just like the case, because these positive and negative manifolds will eventually be separated from each other.
Yeah. But what do you mean increasing the width of the magnetic field?
So your electric field is like this much, but the magnetic field, you allow it to be, you know, at a larger extent, spatial extension. Yeah, spatial extension. Any other comments or? Yeah, so probably not too much time left. Looks like it's a 5 minutes or something like that. How much time do I have? Yeah. I think this is Alejandro should like this particular problem. This is another new problem over here. And we have found apparently some kind of a multi-channel non-competing mechanism. Usually the pair creation discussed so far are, you know, the overlapping of continuum manifolds. But sometimes pair can be created if you have like bound state mixing with the continuum state. Yeah, so this will be like, you can call this bound state diving into the Dirac sea kind of thing. So for a very large interaction strength, for example, over here, you can see two bound states have been dived into this negative continuum state. And you would naively think that in this case, there must be one dominant channel. If each of this provides a channel of decay, then there must be a dominant channel which will be responsible for the pair creation process. Our investigation actually showed that this is not the case. So when you have, for example, two dived bound states, this pair creation rate, which corresponds to this rising portion over here, comes from the contribution of both of those dived states. So we have used, in particular, this complex coordinate rotation method in this analysis. And after this rotation, the energy becomes complex. The real part corresponds to the location of these dived bound states. And the imaginary part corresponds to some kind of the width of these bound states. And it turns out that this total creation rate has to be the sum of both of those imaginary parts. So this is a very surprising result for us. Yeah, so let me just almost summarize, and say what we intend to go after this. So far, in all of the examples that I told you, we have not included the force between the created particles or between the particle and antiparticle after they're being created by the external field. Neither have I included the back interaction of these particles on the external field. So the next step naturally will be the extension of this model with something that includes that. And that, in fact, is what we have started and Reiner has already discussed in his talk. So, of course, with this kind of new model, we would like to see contributions due to vacuum correction, light field correction, or a correction of matter field. And some preliminary investigation has already shown that there is a wide modification depending on whether there's this kind of a force present or no force present. This is in terms of the number of particles being created or the spatial extension of the created particle in the presence or in the absence of such kind of force interaction. So I don't believe I have enough time to go into details, but thank you very much for your attention.
Where you have these bound states that dive into a negative energy C, you said that there's a complex width.
Yes.
Occurs. What is the size of this width? And it's presumably a measure of pair creation.
The width is, well, on this scale, of course, it's like, not very large. So these two will not overlap.
And why are you surprised that the widths are additive?
Because usually you would think that if it's written as the sum of two, then in the long term, one of them will dominate, right?
I mean, they would not be additive if the negative C couples them. Right.
Well, I mean, this example shows that this quantum field of decay involves all states, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there any analogy in atomic physics for this non-quantum?
I don't know. Well, the hardcore ammo.
Usually the width is a measure of the interaction that goes if the decay here is by calculation, we would expect the width that you calculate to be a measure of that calculation rate. And so I ask you what is the magnitude.
Right now, these are prepared with a potential which is very wide or very deep. So it has these bound states formed. And then when we make this interaction very deep, then they will go below the threshold. And that's where you start, and we don't have any other control. You know, the simulation will eventually give us those.
And calculation using the complex energy.
Yes, there are two calculations. One is by diagonalizing this complex H, and that gives us the width. And the other calculation is just the regular ab initio calculation without any complex coordinate rotation. That is our numerical result. Yeah, that result that gives you this this edge over here. This is actually something 1 minus exponential. So there is a rate over there from this numerical calculation, right? And that will be sort of this particular gamma I was talking about. However, in this second computation, when we do this complex coordinate analysis, we would get two rays from diagonalizing the system. And then it turns out the sum of those two imaginary parts precisely matches this particular rising edge.
Would this be like this? I mean, in fact, people have used these methods of using the avoided crossings in your quasi-discrete picture, the picture I showed before. That one can actually use this, the size of these avoided crossings, to directly determine the decay rate or in the inverse lifetime. So there's a one-to-one correspondence.
In what system? In
People have done it, for example, on resonances in helium. You can calculate the resonance widths of doubly excited states of helium just by looking at, when you do this in a discretization picture like you have, you look at projected sizes of the avoided crossings, and you can extract the lifetime or the width of the autoionization resonances.
So you have the mixing of two bound states with a continuum?
The continuum.
Okay.
And the size of the avoided crossing gives you the strength of the mixing into the continuum, which is nothing but saying how strongly the quasi-bound state couples to the continuum, and that gives you the lifetime of the
continuum. It's the sum of both. Okay.
Yeah. But there's a final model where when you have two resonances coupled to the same continuum, then the two resonances mix, you get linear combinations, and then you get one very broad resonance and one sharp resonance.
Yes,
but you don't see this here.
Then you need the coupling.
Yeah.
I think this additive thing is only because you have no coupling.
No coupling.
Right. Yes. Right.
Just like two different stress, and sorry, two different bound states being coupled to some different continuum, and then of course they just add up.
That's right.
They are energetically non-degenerate, and unless you introduce coupling, they don't help each other.
At the end, you mentioned that there's two things that you want to explore further, namely that the created pair actually interacts.
Sorry.
And the other thing is the what you call back reaction.
Yeah.
So, could you say a little more of what you expect there in which direction this goes?
So we have to solve the Dirac equation and Maxwell's equation iteratively to see how the matter wave affects the light wave and how the light wave affects the matter wave. So that's kind of
Yes, I understand. But I was wondering, you create this pair, right?
Yeah.
And then locally you have very strong
Coulomb
pressure. Does this actually locally enhance the
That's a key question, right? It was Christian in his wonderful talk who for the first time pointed out that maybe the fact that these two guys bind each other more, an electron and a positron, he provided a picture that that stronger binding actually lowers the threshold for creating these pairs. Mm-hmm. So it's completely counterintuitive, but its calculations are suggesting it. And if you click on the next one, you see that in some sense ours do it as well, because if you see at the top one, with force means this calculation, so it's once again number of pairs as a function of time. And the top curve is the one where we do include the Maxwell coupling between the two created particles. So the upper calculation includes that electron and positron do attract each other. And suddenly we get more of these guys than without, which is consistent with Christian's observation, but in some sense counterintuitive. So it's just an open question, a very fundamental question. It's open. And I think Florian's result, on the other hand, disagree with that. So that's where we are so far with our understanding.
In a super strong field, you would expect the electron to go out and then come back, the positron to go one direction and come back. Is there any possibility of recollision? Have you thought of that?
Well, that was the magnetic
field. Atomic physics, right?
Some kind of a magnetic field that will I don't know.
You have a time-band field, right? The electron goes out, comes back, right?
Ah.
The core can be collision, but the positron does the opposite thing, and then they should recollide, no?
So far, they're too strong. They just
Because of the strong magnetic fields. Okay.
But this has been calculated by Kuchar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
So something like this kind of
condition model.
It's done.
Nice.
The fact that the pions are composite doesn't bother you?
Pions are composite.
They are composite.
You mean there will be some
have you neglected?
You should.
But quarks cannot be deconfined, so.
David Gross is interested in if laser fields can be strong enough to at least stretch the quarks.
But then pairs will appear. That's our experience. I will discuss a little bit in the string picture.
Okay.
Also the Coulomb interaction.
So you can't dissociate quarks.
You can't. I mean, if you're talking about QCD, then you will, if you put a strong enough field, you're going to pop up pairs. They're not going to, you can't take a quark in your hand, unfortunately.
So in your pair creation numerical calculations, I think you started always from the vacuum. Did you also?
Well, in one case, the Klein paradox, we started with a single particle, right?
Single particle, okay.
Yeah.
But so my question is, if you just start with the vacuum or yeah, so let's say you start with the vacuum, you should then get a stationary state developing after some time, right? You should get electrons and positrons flowing out of the barrier.
Okay.
Did you look at this stationary state in this case or maybe other cases? Because I think if you then do look at the Klein paradox, you should actually look at the single electron impinging on the stationary state, right?
Sure, if you have a constant flux of electron coming in, it will come out to suppress the constant magnitude.
No, I'm not talking about a constant flux of electrons. I'm talking about an electron impinging on a barrier that has been there.
That's exactly what these animations show. So first comes the potential, creates more or less a steady state of flux going to the left and to the right. And then comes a wave packet in and horribly distorts this process.
Right, but you did not do, let's say, a separate calculation that might be even simpler where you calculated the stationary state itself. Maybe there is a way to do that in a different
technique, right? Yeah, we did a numerical simulation. Maybe it can be done.
Complex energies, something like that.
Good idea.
Okay, that's Charles. Every day at 3:15, there's coffee and cookies in the coffee room. cross the whole system.